Good evening, everybody. Hope you're having a lovely day today. Not sure what time zones folks are in who are online. So if it's earlier, great. If it's another day, good morning. We're talking about mindfulness of the body tonight. And I opted to do this talk for a number of different reasons, one of which we And probably the most important one is it is an area that initially I hadn't heard of when I first started meditating. That was not the focus of any of the meditation classes I had been to, or daytime retreat or day-long retreats or weekend retreats. It was all about breathing and things of that. And it was a while into my practice before mindfulness of the body was ever brought up by any instructor I had. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this talk. The second was because it has become a huge part of my practice. And there's a number of reasons for that, which I'll get into during the talk. But it is very, very important to me, this part of my practice. And I learn so much from it that I hope others, if it's not part of your practice, will contemplate how to add it into your practice. So, can everybody hear me okay? Awesome. Thank you. I called this talk Waking Up to Your Body. Waking up into your own body, actually. Because about 12 years ago, 13 years ago, something like that, I had a wake-up call. I was working in New York City, commuting home to Florida periodically, wasn't feeling great, had some tests done. I knew I had arthritis in my knees, and in New York City, you're either walking or you're on the subway or the bus or something. And I expected in the winter, as I'm walking down the steps into the subway, that my knees would hurt. That's just part of a cold, damp winter and arthritis in your knees. Okay. Well, all of a sudden, I get diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. That was not on my bucket list. It was not something that was a check mark on my to-do list, nothing. It was unexpected. I was stunned, shocked, horrified. All these things running through my head and wondering why my body was fighting me and betraying me. And during this time, I was meditating. I had been meditating for years before this. And I was using a lot of meditation at that time to decrease my stress level because I was at that point dean of graduate studies at a college in New York City. And there's a lot of networking involved with that and bringing in industry folks to work with your students and things of that nature. So not only was I teaching and mentoring faculty, I was also trying to work with industry folks, and now I get this diagnosis. And I'm like, what do I do with this? It didn't occur to me to do mindfulness of the body. I was angry at my body. It betrayed me. I was frustrated. There's no cure. You can maybe do remission, but there's no cure. What do you do with something like that, right? And then I started going to more talks and retreats, day long, weekend long. And finally, somebody did a body scan. And then somebody did a walking meditation. And then somebody else talked about mindfulness of the body. I had been meditating at that point for at least 15 years. And hadn't had it mentioned once by any instructor, any teacher, layperson, Buddhist nun, anybody. The readings I had done were more not strictly Dharma readings, but meditation type readings. But they were more about loving kindness and compassion and things of that nature. But again, body scan and stuff wasn't part of that. So once I found this, given where I was in my world, I'm like, I gotta try this because when you have the illness I have, and other people have different chronic illnesses that are painful, you're put on meds for different things to try to help you manage chronic pain. And RA, rheumatoid arthritis, has chronic pain. It's just something I live with. So meds don't always work. What are you going to do? Well, I'm going to meditate. I'm going to find a way to utilize the tools that the Buddha taught to improve my own life. And when I've looked back at where I started and where I am, I often wonder why in intro to meditation classes, sometimes the very first thing they teach is focusing on the breath, right? Everybody remember that? Go back to your breath, come back to your breath. If your mind wanders, go back to the breath. Nothing wrong with that. We all do that. I still do that. I'm sure other people do as well. But I'm wondering why lesson four, five, six, or seven isn't mindfulness of the body. I think a lot of intro sessions shortchange students by not putting that in there in more detail sooner, so they don't have to wait like I did 15 years in my practice, right? So here we are. Without the body, there is no breath. So we're starting with mindfulness of breathing, but if we don't have the body, what's the point? In the Anapanasati Sutta, the Buddha teaches four exercises in connection with the body. The first is breathing, the second is recognizing the body or calming the body. The third is recognizing the position of the body. Are you standing? Are you sitting? Are you walking? Are you lying down? And we've heard this before where when you hear the words like when you're standing, you know that you are standing. When you're sitting, you know that you are sitting. When I'm walking, I know that I am walking. When I'm lying down, I know that I am lying down. And the fourth is recognizing the actions of the body. Am I bending down? Am I drinking tea? Am I lifting a cup of tea? Those are actions. Tying that into breathing, breathing is the vehicle that brings us home to our body. And if we don't come home to our body and care for it, who will? And that last statement is from Thich Nhat Hanh's book, Breathe, You Are Alive. Anālayo, when he translated the Satipatthana Sutta, talks about the actual meditation practices described in that sutta, which includes contemplation of the body. And part of that is awareness of breathing, awareness of bodily postures, clear knowledge in regard to bodily activities, analysis of the body into its anatomical parts, and analysis of the body into its elementary qualities, and finally, the contemplation of a dead body in nine consecutive stages of decay. Now, you've already heard me start repeating myself, right? We already have talked about awareness of breathing. Awareness of bodily postures, of activities. We're going to hear this as in the Buddha's teaching, he repeats things. And in oral traditions, we do that to remember things, right? So we're already hearing them again here this evening. And last week, I think it was last week, when Peter was talking about where we're going with curriculum this year, he mentioned Analio's work, and I mentioned having taken the class at the Bari Center. And I will tell you, the contemplations of the nine stages of bodily decay, when I first saw the curriculum, I was like, really? Really? I got to do this. But it brings up impermanence and our focus on everything. Everything goes away, including us, right? And that clinging to things really doesn't stop that process. So my frustration, I interpreted that for me as my frustration with my body at times, is really a waste of my energy. Because my body's my body, and it is what it is right now. And one day it's not going to be here. So why am I so angry at it? Right? So if you will permit me, one of the books I have at home is called The Issue at Hand by Gil Fronsdahl. And it's a lot of short meditations on different things. And this is from the section called The Body at the Center. And he mentions in here that he never contemplated the body having any importance in his path of practice. He did not begin his practice with any intention to, as he put it, discover his body. However, during his meditation practice, he discovered when he sat down to meditate, and I'm sure he's not the only one because I recognize myself in some of this, and I'm sure you will too. His body painfully revealed areas of tightness, tension, and psychological holding patterns that he was convinced that these physical difficulties were nuances to be ignored or transcended rather than the actual substance and unfolding of practice. How many of you have ever felt tightness, aches, pains when you sit, and you're trying to get comfortable on a cushion or in a chair, or if you're laying down to meditate? It's the back. Can I put something under my knees? Because it doesn't feel good. All of that is we're aware in one aspect of our body, but we're not being kind to it. We're not treating it with kindness and generosity that it has us here in this earthly plane. We're upset it's hurting. Or why, when I hit this certain age, did my back start hurting? Or my knees don't bend as easily as they used to? Or whatever your particular ailment may be. And he goes on to talk about how over the years, he is still repeatedly surprised at how much awareness, love, and compassion are found in and through the body. And that mindfulness of the body is the foundation of mindfulness practice and one of the best friends we have for integrating that practice into daily life. The Buddha himself said there is one thing that, when cultivated and regularly practiced, leads to deep spiritual intention, to peace, to mindfulness and clear comprehension, to vision and knowledge, to a happy life here and now, and to the culmination of wisdom and awakening. And what is that one thing? Mindfulness centered on the body. And he notes that elsewhere the Buddha said, if the body is not cultivated, the mind cannot be cultivated. If the body is cultivated, the mind is cultivated. So the tie-in and interconnectedness of the mind to the body is key. You can't do one without the other, really. And if we're ignoring our body, trying to push it away, it eventually will come back and grab our attention, one way or another, right? So the other important, well, there's several important components. I don't want this to sound like this is the only one. Anne Cushman talks about some reasons that grounding your attention in your body is vital to the practice of awakening. And one is your body is always right here, right now. Think about that for a minute. Right here, right now. Just think about what your body is doing. What do you feel? Can you feel your clothes? How you're sitting? Where your body is touching a chair or a cushion or a couch or a pillow? That's right here, right now. You're aware in the moment. Our mind, when we're trying to meditate, our mind doesn't stop. It just goes. And we're trying to ignore all those thoughts and the grocery list and the to-do list and the work list and the whatever list. But when we focus on the body, you have no choice but to be here and now. Thich Nhat Hanh talks about using doing the dishes as a meditative practice, feeling how your hand is moving while you're washing a plate. If you're focused and aware right there in that moment, that's what we're all striving for when we meditate, is to be in the moment. And you know you're alive. He goes on to say in several of his books, use everyday practices as meditation, such as brushing your teeth, brushing your hair, picking up a cup to make coffee or tea. Be in the moment. Know what your body is doing. Anne Cushman goes on to say your physical body is inextricably connected with your breath, your heart, and your mind. So when you ground your practice in your body, you enhance your ability to investigate other aspects of your experience through your meditative attention, which includes your energy, your emotions, your thoughts, relationships, etc. Body sensations can be a focal point around which to gather and unify a scattered mind. Further, your body reveals that everything rises and passes away. It is a good tool to use when talking about impermanence, to remind ourselves, what I have now won't be here later. I do that every morning. I'm in bed an hour, I'm awake an hour every morning, laying in bed, stretching. Sort of do a body scan. I start with my feet and I move every body part I can, coming up my body to limber it up because everything's tight. In the morning, I can't make a fist. I'm lucky if I can do this in the morning. And it takes me about an hour to be able to close my hands. And that hour gives me time to be grateful for what I can do that day. It may not be what I could do yesterday, and it may not be what I can do tomorrow, but that particular day, this is where my body is at. And I have, if I'm fighting against it, everything tightens up more. I've learned. If I'm accepting of it and being in touch with my body and knowing what hurts, what doesn't, then I can meditate on that, become at peace with it, and move forward. Jack Kornfield, who is one of the, or one of somebody I consider to be one of the preeminent teachers of our style of meditation, talks about taking our body for granted or ignoring the body as if it's not important causes us to then not be as aware when we're practicing any type of mindfulness. So, for example, when you sit down to meditate, you might expect to become peaceful and quiet, but often the first thing you actually experience, we talked a moment ago about, is tightness or pain in the sensations in your body. You become aware of the tension you're carrying. You become aware of how the stress you've had during the day is currently affecting you. And you might even realize you've been ignoring parts of your body because you had to get through the day. But as we increase our meditative practice and we grow in our meditation practice, we then learn to become more aware in our body, and that sometimes our body's painful and sometimes it's pleasant. But he goes on to say that the important question is, can you touch the difficulties in your body with mindfulness, or do you ignore your body and convince yourself that the physical body doesn't matter? He and many other teachers have stated that healing starts by simply becoming mindful of the body as it is, and to be paying benevolent attention to your body when things get difficult. This can be really hard to do when pain is a factor in the body. And this pain could be, as I've described my own, chronic pain due to an illness. It could be tension. It could be stress. It could be emotional upset. It could be all sorts of different things for each one of us. So, how do we go back to the body? How do we help ourselves utilize a practice that the Buddha himself taught to become more in touch with our own bodies? There are breathing techniques. There's various types of body scan practices one can do. Walking meditations is another tool, and there's many, many more. Shyla Catherine, who I know Peter has talked about in the past and has had for a retreat before, in her book, In Wisdom Wide and Deep, has an entire chapter on contemplating 32 different parts of the body to help one get started in becoming more aware of the body. Christine Wolf has a book entitled Outsmart Your Pain, with a chapter entitled Ending the War with Your Body, which I have reread several times because sometimes I forget the lesson and have to go back to it. Jon Kabat-Zinn started mindfulness-based stress reduction to find a way to help patients in the hospital who have chronic pain to use mindfulness meditation techniques to deal with pain when medication doesn't. And MBSR is now a standard of practice in major hospitals across our country and the world, in fact. And it is doing different types of body scans and getting in touch with the body and understanding what you're feeling and noting and things we've learned, like mindfulness of the breath, right? How do we use the breath to get in touch with our body? How can we use the breath to breathe through pain? Noting techniques we've used in mindfulness of the breath. They do same type of things with MBSR. So all of these are available and bring us back to the body, without which we are cutting off a major portion of the practices of Vipassana meditation techniques and the Dharma. I mean, Buddha taught walking meditations. He talked about feeling when your foot touches the ground. That's being aware of your body. How often do we wander through a house and don't even remember why we came into a room? Because we weren't in touch with our body. When's the last time we paid attention to actually washing dishes or putting dishes into a dishwasher? Picking something up and putting it down. We just do things rote. So we're not paying attention to what we're doing. We're just doing things versus taking a little mini break during the day, even if it's 5 minutes of every hour, and just feel what your feet are doing or feel what your body is doing. Last month, I was in a talk on mindfulness of the body, and the person leading the talk teaches yoga. I thought of you, Leslie. And she's in the UK, and she had us in this talk do a very brief 3-minute activity where you take your hands and you rub your nails together, and you just do that for like 30 seconds. So if you want to, feel free. If you don't, no worries. But the premise behind it is you do this for about 30 seconds, right? Doesn't seem like much. And then you stop. What do you feel? Is there a tingling? Do you feel a sensation in your fingers or your fingernails? Something that wasn't there before. And that little teeny tiny practice we just did is a way to bring us back to the body. Doesn't take much. Anybody can do that sitting on a phone call, if you're at work on a Teams call, in a boring meeting. It's all you have to do. Come back to the body. Feel where the tension is. I carry mine in my shoulders. Anybody else carry theirs in their shoulders? Yeah, Leslie does. Yeah. Oh. Well, I can't read your name, sir. I apologize, but he did as well. So think about where are you holding tension? Where do you hold your stress? How does that feel? Pay attention to your body. Major teachers in various meditative styles talk about the importance of mindfulness of the body. The Buddha taught mindfulness of the body. It is in the suttas. I'm hopeful as teachers go on, they'll bring it in sooner so somebody doesn't have to wait 15 years like I did to discover it. I find it incredibly liberating to use when I'm having a really bad RA flare up. It helps me get through the pain when every single joint in my body just aches, from my joints of my toes, my hands, my wrists, my shoulders. Everything just hurts. And the idea of getting up to do a walking meditation sounds excruciating. The twisted part is, I know if you don't move, it makes it worse. So you have to get up and move. So I do a walking meditation. And the first 5 steps are horrid. But then it loosens up, and then I can be. And I could stop fighting and being at war with my body. And I can start focusing on breathing into my body and feeling the tension, naming how the pain, letting it go. I couldn't do that if I had not been introduced to mindfulness of the body. So, that is why I wanted to give this talk this evening. I had no idea how long this was supposed to be, so I planned it for 20 with time for questions, which is where we're at. I would appreciate comments, thoughts, questions. And Peter, if there's something I forgot to mention you would have liked mentioned, please, please feel free, sir.
Well, Susan, I'm curious
Yes, sir.
about how you proceed when you're doing your body's scan. Can you kind of think out
Sure.
loud about how you do that? That might be instructive,
Yes.
helpful for us.
Yes, indeed. I do body scans at different times. I do them every day, every morning, to see where my body is that morning. I don't rush out of bed. I used to, I don't anymore. I just physically cannot. So I start at my toes. And first, I will take four really deep breaths. And I will do an inhalation of four, hold it for seven, let it out for eight. That's what I do. That's the breathing technique I prefer to use. You can also do box breathing where it's breathe in for four, hold it for four, breathe out for four, hold that for four. But I do, it helps me cleanse things and relax enough because I sort of dread what the morning's going to bring. So, and I know that. So I need to relax as much as I can to do a body scan. And then I will start with my feet and I will flex my feet out and try to stretch my toes as far as I can. And then I will try to bring my toes in as much as I can. And I always chuckle to myself and think of the Die Hard movie where the guy tells Bruce Willis's character to relax by scrunching his toes on the carpet in the airplane, right? So stretching, and I do this three or four times to see if I'm even able to do it. Can I scrunch my toes? Can't always. So then I know I'm going to have issues with my feet that day. Okay. Then I will roll my feet. I'll lift my feet up a little bit and I'm rolling my ankles. I'll roll them opposite towards each other. Then I'll roll them together one way, together the other way. And I do that about five times each one of those to see if there's any pain, clicking, or whatever in my ankles. Then I'm tightening my calf muscle and relaxing it. And I count five. When I do that, I tighten and hold it for five, and I relax it for five. And I do that three, four times. And then I try to bend my knees. And I'll try to slide my feet up on the bed. So I'm not lifting my legs per se. I'm just bringing my feet up, which makes my knees rise. And I'll stretch that out. And I'm listening to my body creak and groan, as well as how it feels, what's tight. Are the muscles around my knees tight? Are the joints tight? Is something popping louder than normal? And then I do my thighs and I tighten those and I relax those. And I do the same thing I did for my calves. I hold it for like five and I let it go for five. And I do that about three, four times. And then my glutes or behind or butt, whatever word you like, I'll tighten it. And then I'll relax it. And does that cause any pain? Does that do anything to my hips? Does that do anything, make me feel bad about anything in my body? Is anything tight? And then I will try very hard. I'll pull my knees back up and I'll try to flatten my back onto my bed. So I'm sort of rolling my pelvis out a little bit. My knees are up and I'm trying to flatten my back to see how my back is doing. Because I have moderate to severe arthritis in my lower back. So I need to see how that's going. That may also entail, as I'm scanning, for me to move my knees. So my knees are bent, move them over to the left while my back is flat, back to the middle, and over to the right. And I will do that a few times just to see how the hips are and the lower back is. Then I go to the diaphragm and I'll do some breathing exercises. I like to feel my lower stomach rise and fall. And then I like to feel the sides of my chest go in and out. And so I'm breathing up a little bit higher, but I like to start breathing low first. And then I try to shrug my shoulders backwards. And I can hear them popping right now. And then roll them forwards and see what's creaky, what's achy. And then in bed, I lift my arms up and I try to rotate my shoulders, and I'll do my wrists and see where my hands are. How bad are they this morning? Okay. And then it's my neck and trying to move my head around and how much mobility do I have? Because I learned very, very quickly with chronic pain, if you do not move and stretch or figure out where you're tight, you lose range of motion. So my body scanning is not only for meditative purposes, it's also for physical movement purposes. It's also for stretching purposes, which is me being compassionate to my body and seeing what my limitations are going to be that morning and figure out how I can best honor it by being in my body. If I tried to ignore all this, I'd be sitting on a couch all day, not wanting to move. That's not a life for me to have. I have three crazy dogs I got to deal with and a partner. So I can't sit on a couch. But that, Peter, is one version of a body scan I do. I hope that's helpful for folks. You can do them in variations. There's tons of techniques out there. Some are short, some are longer. Analio's got one that takes quite a while, but he also does it very, very quickly because he's used to doing it so much. And that you can look at the Bari Center's work. I mean, it's free. He has his audio files on there, but his are really quick. So, other questions, thoughts,
Let
comments?
me
Yes,
add the thing into it,
Susan.
Susan. Sharon, before we do it to you, let me. There's a part of the first foundation is called the four comprehensions, and I think it's very relevant to what you described in your practice. The first one is a worthy goal. What is your aspiration in a particular situation? In this case, it's for you to explore your body. The tension and try to figure out a way to open things up, get things moving. So that's a worthy goal that has two components. One of them I just described in terms of, helping your body get to work, so to speak. The other one is to empower your ability to be introspective. Intentionally introspective. In this case, it's about the body, about tension in the body, but it could be about anything else in the body or in the room, sound or whatever. So that's the first one is the worthy goal. Second one is the suitable means. And suitable means, can be associated with the breath. You mentioned box breathing and other practices, but also the way you systematically moved your attention. One joint to another. So the most suitable means for doing that is introspective awareness, to be intentional about noticing and working with, not working against, what's going on in your body. And then the third one is it's called minding the domain. Basically, it means being mindful. And once again, there are two aspects to that. One of them is for you to be more skillful in terms of this routine that you go through for opening your body up for the day. The other one is the ability to be introspective, to aim your attention at a particular focal point and maintain that focus until the job is done. Then you go to the next part of whatever your practice happens to be. In this case, it's body scanning. And the final of the four comprehensions, first one's worthy goal, suitable means, minding the domain. And the fourth one is this moving your life toward awakening, toward liberation? Once again, there's two aspects to that. One of them is liberation from the tension and the immobility of your experience when you wake up in the morning. And the other one is the process of being able to notice and let go. Notice and let go. Notice and let go. So I think that's woven into the fabric of the first foundation of mindfulness, and it's very relevant to what you were describing in terms of your own practice. Sharon, you had a comment?
Oh, this is a wonderful talk. Thank you, Susan. Gravity, I would like to just say everything that you talked about was really, I could relate to so much. Gravity, just being mindful of gravity on our bodies is really something that I have practiced doing the body, being meditating with an awareness of the body, either just being pretty much in a stationary place like you described sometimes. In fact, right now, when I was listening to you, I had a one of those rolling, I don't even know what they're called. You probably have seen them. They're rollers
Like a foam roller.
that you can. Yeah, but they're different densities, and you can buy them in sporting goods stores and so forth. And I have that underneath my thighs so that I am relaxed. And I'd also like to mention shifting my attention while I'm doing that is the best way for me to succeed in meditating so that my mind and body are engaged, and I'm also aware of my let's say the pull of gravity in different places and allowing that sensation to be present with that sensation. Sometimes when I'm breathing, my attention for the breath is to travel down the entire length of my body to my feet and to feel the sensation of movement of both mostly lymph and other, body fluids and even body noises, like my stomach for some reason is making noise. And that's okay too, if it's not too loud. I kind of laugh because we may not be aware unless we're present that our bodies make a lot of noises. Sometimes I focus on that.
And I think that's a good point that reinforces that we go through life so many times where we're ignoring things like sounds our body may make or aches and pains. And I mean, there were many times a few years ago, my kids used to joke and say I could never sneak up on anybody because it sounded like snap, crackle, pop when I was walking down the hallway. And I had gotten to a point where I didn't hear it anymore, but they still did. And so we sort of tune out stuff. So I think it's really good to be able to tune into your body and hear things so you know where it's at. Thank you.
Well, and even, yeah, Peter, you've talked about, the sounds of tinnitus and in your ears and that kind of thing. The sounds that are everywhere. I think actually I enjoy that. It's kind of funny. And I have to be careful not to get carried away with the humor of all of that. I also go to a DO that does manipulations, which is really beneficial because when I'm getting treatment, which is a pretty twice a month, pretty helpful for dealing with all of the things that you're describing that happen with any kind of autoimmune disorder. And the other thing, and just age, really. And having maybe being not moving enough and not allowing the body to move in a loose way rather than a tense way. And that is my work, to stretch, just like you said, to stretch and be aware that you're stretching so that your body is not fighting itself when you're stretching.
And that I think is key, is it goes back to the stop being at war with your own body concept.
Exactly.
Yeah,
You
let me add
mentioned
another thing.
Shiloh. I
Sharon, let
can
me.
I say something about Shiloh? When the first retreat, Peter, that we did with Shiloh, I don't know if you remember, and I'm trying to remember, there was a name for it because she was dealing with some body issues, and
She
she
has lower back
invited
pain.
all of us.
She has lower back pain.
Pardon?
She has lower back
Well,
pain.
I guess it, right. Well, it was from an accident or something. But what I wanted to say, and there's a name for it, and I'm hoping somebody can remember. It's called, I can't remember what it's called, but it has to do with performers that learn a technique. It's very often related to people doing yoga, but there's an actual name where performers are become aware of their bodies and movement so that they can do that. If anybody can think of it, I can't for some reason, but
Alexander technique.
that's it. Thank you. Thank you, Leslie. I figured somebody would
No, that
know it.
wasn't Leslie.
And
That
that's
was
what's
Robert. Robert.
Yeah.
But Robert. Oh, okay. Well,
So
that's what I was trying to remember. And that's what Shiloh was doing, I think, the Alexander technique with anyone who wanted to join her. So, anyway, thank you.
thank you.
Most of us don't have to deal with the kind of chronic experience that you're talking about, Susan, but in terms of dealing with things like knee pain, especially when you're sitting, the useful strategies, there are several useful strategies, but one of them is to kind of inhabit the whole body awareness, which takes some practice to do, because like you were saying before, people are generally not very tuned into the embodied experience. But the knee is just one segment of the embodied experience. And one of the things that's helpful is to sit with the whole body and breathe into the whole body, let go into the whole body, and allow that knee pain to just be part of it. Because what happens is we tend to become fixated on the tension around the knee. But when we allow our attention to move out into the larger body, then the knee pain, the contraction around the knee in the body and in the mind is dissipated.
And sometimes, Peter, one way to add to that technique is also to name the pain. Because just saying pain, like my back hurts, or I lifted this box wrong and now I've got this back pain, or I have this knee pain, or I have whatever, that doesn't help us understand the pain. So if we can add other concepts to it, like, is it stabbing? Is it sharp? Is it dull? Is it throbbing? Then we can dissipate out from that. Because when we just think pain, it just becomes so fixating and so tight there that we have a harder time letting go and being in the whole body. But if I can say, oh, my knee is throbbing because the weather's changing, or because I tweaked it shoveling in the yard, okay. It's not as bad. And I know that sounds very simplistic, but try it a few times where you're naming the pain and being as specific as you can, and it will help you be able to move away from it. And as Peter was describing, going into more of a whole body embodiment.
Okay,
Leslie.
Val has a question, and then Leslie.
Okay.
Val? Val? I'm sorry. Satish, I'm sorry.
Okay,
I have my name wrong. I'm sorry.
Sorry. It's a fundamental question. What is the goal for mindfulness?
The what?
What is the goal for mindfulness?
Did you hear that, Susan?
Yes, what is the goal for mindfulness? Was the question. In many teachers that I have studied, it is awareness and presence and now. To be aware of your body, aware of your breathing, be aware of right now, here and now.
What is the purpose of all those things?
What is the purpose of all those things?
That's mindfulness, you know.
Yeah, it's
Using my
mindfulness.
words. This is
Yeah.
using my words.
Yeah, it the purpose of all of it is to be mindful.
It's a circular answer.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
It
the mindfulness is considered to be the guardian. And what that means is that in alliance with investigation, mindfulness kind of hovers over subjective experience to recognize when the mind's construct is conditioned that produces dukkha, or when the mind is freed from that. So mindfulness is that metacognitive awareness that enables the whole process to work. Without mindfulness, none of it would work. And it's all about liberation, either liberation from aches and pains of arthritis, or ultimate liberation from the notion that there's an enduring autonomous self.
Okay, this is what I think. I'm just sharing. Mindfulness brings us into the present, in the presence. Otherwise, without that, at least my mind is either in the past or future, and that's the cause of dukkha you mentioned.
Right.
So mindfulness
Yes.
is just being in the present, and whatever is happening in the present. Be there. It could be the breath, could be a body, could be a flower outside or sunshine. Whatever is present. Anyway, enough said.
No, and I agree with that. I think that that's a great point that takes us back to what we've been talking about tonight, which is if I'm present in my body, I'm here right now, I'm present. If I'm pushing my body away and ignoring my body, I'm focused on things that haven't happened or things that already did happen. And so the future or the past, but being in the moment and feeling things and paying attention to your body actions as well as your posture, all the things we've talked about this evening are, I think, fitting in nicely to what you just said, is it brings you into right here, right now awareness. Leslie?
Yeah, I want to say also echo what Sharon said. Thank you for this talk. It's been very helpful and very clarifying. And I really identified with the comments you made early on about your anger and your, the battle that we do. And so we all do that, right? I had a very serious, physical challenge in 2021 that has drastically changed my life and what I'm able to do. And I spent way too long fighting it, being mad about it, and had to learn the hard way that the sooner you just accept what is, the easier the what is. But I want to add one other thing. Peter kind of touched on it just a minute ago, but for me, this the concentration or the focus on the body, mindfulness of the body, has been one of the most profound ways for me to really get big lessons in impermanence. Because up until I got really sick in 1971, I was so strong and healthy. For 7 decades, I was this, really fit, active, healthy person. And then all of a sudden, I was not any of those things. And I was so angry. But when I then turned to a study, a really dedicated study of impermanence, I began to shift profoundly in the way I was looking at my body, and the changes, some of which were complicated with just getting old. The illness itself contributed a lot, but just as you get as you approach 80, you begin to have a lot more things going wrong with you. And it's just the body beginning, or not beginning, but in the process of deteriorating, of going away. I get bruises on my arm, really severe, just all up and down my arms. I can touch a shelf and I'll rip the skin off. And then, oh, then it starts growing back. I go, even for an old lady, my skin is growing back. So I really like that. For me, it's been helpful to really bring that lesson of impermanence into my mindfulness of the body, because if there's anything that is a demonstration of impermanence, it's our body, right?
Yeah, I think so. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Susan. Really great talk.
Well, thank you. April put a note in the chat saying that all of this, combined with right effort, cultivating wholesome states, abandoning unwholesome ones, fits in. April, is there anything else you want to add about your comment?
I don't know. It's interesting too, because I've just spent the last 2 weeks, my dad had major surgery and he's been in a rehab center, and I was with him in physical therapy every day. And then of course, seeing all the other residents of the rehab that were in various, you know, some major injuries and some better. So definitely a lot of impermanence, aging, and mindfulness of the body going on there. But yeah, just as you guys were discussing mindfulness, which made me think of right mindfulness, the fact that mindfulness is part of the Eightfold Path, that we're taking this experience of really being aware and being in the present moment. And, you know, even like you were saying, Susan, you're choosing, even with your very physical attention to your body and your, like, that sort of progressive muscle relaxation, that there is, I brought in the right effort, because there is part of that concentration is, as you said, not being at war with your body and cultivating a more wholesome relationship with that.
No, and that's a great point. I have to at times recognize the blessing my illness has been. And that was really hard for me to say the very first time I ever said that. Because you want to fight against saying something like this is a blessing. However, it has forced me, or allowed me, to become aware of ways to do things differently. And it has also taught me very quickly about impermanence. Activities I could do a year ago, I can't do now. 6 months ago. I mean, there's all sorts of things in the timeline of my illness where I can look back and go, yeah, I can't do that anymore. So, you know, the grief cycle one goes through when you have a loss, sometimes it gets old doing that. However, the flip side of that is it makes me more compassionate with myself, which is a lesson I probably have needed to learn my entire life. Because we're very easy for us to learn compassion for others. And when you do any loving kindness trainings, you know, and they say, you know, you think of someone you don't know real well and have loving kindness towards them, and somebody you maybe see at the grocery store, they don't start with you, because it's hard for us to do that as humans. We think that that's not okay. But this illness has demonstrated to me I don't have a choice. If I want to still have a fulfilling life, I need to stop being angry at stuff. Mm-hmm. And this practice of mindfulness of the body has helped me do that.
And part of what goes on with that too, like with many gifts, some assembly is required. And that's what our practice is about.
Yes.
Is learning how to turn poison into medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that process involves the approach to the experience being that we tend to talk about my pain.
Mm-hmm.
What if it is just the pain? You touched on this a little bit when you talked about labeling. That one of the things with labeling is it starts to create a cognitive separation between, my knee and stabbing or throbbing or aching, all the different terminology. In my first 3 month retreat, I had reliably had cramping in my diaphragm in the left side under my rib cage, and it went on for months. Only when I was sitting on the cushion. If I was sitting in a chair, walking, reclining, standing, not a problem. As soon as I sat on the cushion, it would ha reliably happen. And I was told what you were told, what you told us, which is give it names. There are an amazing number of names that could be applied to pain without really much repetition. There was some repetition. But what I realized was the activity of just it depersonalizes the pain. It becomes something to be experienced and understood rather than a threat. But it takes some practice to really be able to make that work.
Yeah, it sort of goes back to the you are not your pain. And the pain could be physical pain, it could be emotional pain. I mean, we all have the ability or tendency to bring in stressors or pain, losing a loved one, breaking up, stress about a child, stress about a job. We bring that into our bodies and it turns into a tension or tightness in different places. So it doesn't have to be a chronic illness. It could be any kind of suffering or dukkha, right? That we bring in, and we don't have to be that pain. That does not have to identify who we are. And it doesn't have to become who we are. So
So,
I would just want to speak.
Satish,
Can I say something
and
about
then
healing? Hold
just
on one second.
Sharon, Satish, and then John, and then Sharon.
So how about you were talking about labeling or like sensation, energy instead of a pain?
Yeah, you can do that. You can say, I have this sensation of in my knee.
Because pain has a negative connotation, you know.
It can, yes. So that's why moving away from pain, you can say there's this throbbing sensation or this aching sensation or a dull ache, and move away from the word pain.
Right, because that depersonalizes it. John?
I just wanted to go back to what Peter said in the beginning, and what I see in everything is that everybody thinks in words, and you enhance your pain with your words instead of letting it flow. And that's what I believe Buddha allowed us to touch, a no-think place when we meditate, so that we can ease. Pain is part of life. Yes, there's no doubt about it. I've got a TMJ problem with implants that is more excruciating than I ever dreamed. And it hits because it turns out I'm a teeth gritter, but and I've had dentures for 20 years, and you take away the bottom jaw and I get an earache that is like a TMJ thing. It's just phenomenal. All I can say is that if you can separate yourself from what's going on and just go to the breath, I know that's what Susan started her lecture with, is that is what sitting is getting out of your selfing story, your thinking that, and just be. And it's the minimum of the trip because you won't hurt yourself as much. That's how I stop the pain in the jaw from it just immense to being tolerable to finally let go for some reason. But it was the shutting off the thinking about it that helped. So,
We're getting running out of our time. Sharon, you have a comment?
There's a lot. And I just want to say, Leslie reminded me of the healing, the ability to view how and be grateful for our body's ability to heal, because I experienced the same thing with bumping into things and the skin being thin enough to tear, and then other areas of the body, muscles and everything else, that if we are aware and being able to view that our bodies are capable of healing and capable, and be grateful for that. It's an intentional thing to focus on that too, and be compassionate, as Susan had said. All of that together is beneficial.
Oh, thank you, Susan. Do you have any closing remarks?
Yeah, I want to thank everybody for your comments and questions and willingness to hear a new teacher in this group. It was a great experience for me, and I hope you learned something. I always learn when I'm prepping a lecture like this or a talk like this, and I really do appreciate the opportunity. So thanks to Peter, Leslie, and April. And thank you. This was fabulous for me.
You're welcome. So my understanding is that Allie is going to share with us her insights about the second foundation of mindfulness, mindfulness of feelings, next week. Is that correct, Allie?
Hey, Peter. Yes, that is the plan.
Great. Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
It's our custom at the end of our meetings to sit together in silence briefly, so let's do that. Thank you for your practice. I wish you well, and I hope that we're reasonably safe and happy until the next time we have a chance to chat.